It's a mixture of policies that resulted in this decline in inequality in Brazil. There is no silver bullet.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Good news in the world of poverty reduction. Brazil's formerly sky-high wage inequality is not quite so sky-high anymore. And that's a trend that contrasts with rising wage inequality in many high-income countries. A soon-to-be-published article in the Journal of Economic Literature reviews the research that estimates this reduction during recent decades and identifies the changes and the mechanisms that have driven it. Which, as you will find out, is not a trivial task, especially in Brazil. Alisson Portela of Insper is one of the authors. He joins me now. Alisson, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim.
Alisson, I called inequality sky high. So go back to 1995, which I think is the beginning of the period that you're looking at. How does Brazil's wage inequality compare to other countries, well, in South America and other countries in the world?
Yeah, it was pretty high. Brazil has always been like a champion of inequality in the world. For wage inequality, it was around 60 Gini points in the 90s, and in 95, when it started decreasing, it was around 58 Gini points. And it was pretty hard, even for Latin American standards. I think we were the highest by then in Latin America and one of the highest in the world, for sure.
Yeah, when you're the highest in Latin America, then that is high. Now, 20 years later, which is the cutoff point for this, so by 2015, the change in the Gini, how big was it?
So it decreased by around 10 points. Mm-hmm. It was a very important decrease in the period. Brazil was not the only one to go through this decline, but Brazil was really impressive in this sense.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you to compare that to other countries. I said that other countries, other high-income countries, had rising inequality during this period. Was I correct?
Yes, for the high-income countries, the inequality generally increased in this period, so there is a vast literature focused mostly in the US. But for developing countries, the scenario was more mixed. In Latin America in general, especially in the 2000s, inequality decreased for almost every country, especially in South America. Inequality started decreasing in Brazil a little bit earlier compared to other South American countries in the 90s. But the same trend can be found in other countries like in Africa, some other countries in Asia as well.
When we talk about Gini points as economists, that's how we talk about inequality. But you live in Brazil. Is this trend in inequality something that you can see by looking out of your window? Is it something that's visible?
Yeah, it's really visible for anyone that steps a foot in Brazil. So it was much higher in the past. I remember watching TV on Sunday nights with those documentaries about people starving in the northeast of Brazil, which is the poorest region here in the country, eating cactus and lack of water. We don't see that anymore. I remember in my college years, there was a lot of discussion about a new middle class in Brazil. So people that were rising from poverty, starting to consume more, buy durables, buy automobiles. And I remember perfectly a professor of mine in my late years in college was showing me for the first time this graph of the Gini dropping. And I'm quite young for academics, 35. I was very young when this all started changing, but this professor was much older, white hair, and he was not expecting to see something like this decline in his lifetime. Of course, we pick as our time horizon 1995 to 2015, because in 2015, it's when this drop stops.
Right.
It starts increasing slightly again. Now it's decreasing again. So it reached more stable situation. Let's see what the coming years reserve for us.
To explain to anyone who's never been to Brazil, it's a fascinating country when you look at inequality within society, because as you say, you have the regional inequality between the Northeast and Nordeste and wealthier places in the South, but also within communities, within cities, you have that extreme inequality as well, don't you?
Yes, exactly. Brazil is super interesting because of some of its characteristics, like the regional heterogeneity. Brazil is a huge country, as everyone knows, right? In terms of population, in terms of size, it allows us to do a lot of very interesting research that would be much more difficult to do in other countries.
So, Alison, tell me about this research that you've put together in this review article. How much research has there been into this change in inequality during this period in Brazil?
Think about the US or other rich countries. Research is much more vast over there. But Brazil has a lot of good examples of good quality research looking into several aspects of wage inequality in the country. So we have the composition papers that look at factors, but we also have some causal papers or structural model papers. And this is something that it's more difficult to find for other countries as well. So The research on Brazil has covered many aspects of wage inequality that has been published in very good quality journals. Something that is important to put together and try to make sense of it and possibly inspire other research to do something similar with other developing countries as well.
Is the data that you need readily available in Brazil?
Yes, the data in Brazil actually is impressively good. So we have been doing very good demographic census, at least since the 80s. We also have annual survey data that covers the whole country in Brazil, that it's at least annually since the 80s. This data covers both the formal and the informal sector in Brazil. This is something important in developing countries. You could see informality rates as high as 50%, for instance. So it's an important chunk of the population that is working in the informal sector. We also have very good matched employer-employee data, at least since the mid-80s. Of course, this has the caveat that this data covers only the formal sector. Most of the data that is available in developed countries, we can also find here in Brazil.
So your paper divides into two pieces, really. The first is you look at actually what's happened and then try to find out why that's happened. So let's look at what's happened, first of all. And one of the approaches is to decompose those changes in the Gini into composition and wage structure effects. What do each of these represent?
Normally, we do these decompositions for average wages, right?
Yeah.
Differences between groups. But we can do this for differences in time when we can extrapolate this to other moments of the distribution or functionals of the distribution. And the idea here is that we can decompose changes over time into two components. One is the composition effect, which corresponds to changes in the composition of the workforce.
Okay.
So changes in the workforce characteristics, such as years of experience, years of schooling, the sectors that the workers have their jobs, job occupation, regional differences, which are somewhat important in Brazil, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the structure effects. The structure effects try to capture changes in the wage structure. So how these characteristics are rewarded by the market. And this includes the idiosyncratic component as well. So we try to create counterfactuals, assuming, what would have been the Gini coefficient if there were no change in the composition of workers? Or what would be Gini in 2015 if the wage structure was the same as in 1995, for instance? You cannot interpret this as a causal effect, because there is all sorts of assumptions you have to make. But this is interesting because it gives us some good information to start from.
What do we learn from this decomposition in the context of Brazil?
I think the most important message here is that most of the change was because of changes in the wage structure.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the market rewards different skills or different characteristics of the workers. So this is similar of something that has been shown in the past by several other papers. So this is kind of reassuring that we are finding kind of similar answers when we ourselves apply this methodology. Mm-hmm. So we can see that there was a very important decrease in the returns to education, but also an important decrease in the returns to experience. Older workers are not receiving as much as they were relative to young workers in the past. And we can also observe an important decrease in the overall dispersion of wages. So that component of the variability between workers that we cannot explain with the observed characteristics.
Now, the other decomposition that you look at is a decomposition into worker and firm effects. What are we learning that's different here?
We can decompose the variance in the wages into the variance of workers, firms, and the covariance between them. And then we can do the difference over time, simply subtracting these terms. So what we find is that, of course, the variance in terms of workers' effect is very high. It declined over time, but the relative decrease in firms' dispersion of firms' effect is relatively much higher than the decrease in workers' effect. So this suggests that there was a compression in the way that productivity firms transmit to workers' wage. Papers have been suggesting that this could be related to increases in the minimum wage, for instance. Mm-hmm. And we also find this is also reassuring. We also see that decrease in the dispersion of workers' effect is not much associated with a decrease in the dispersion of their characteristics, but rather as these characteristics are also rewarded by the market. So they are premium. So these are two quite different decomposition methods that we explore, but they give similar answers. The very important decline in firms' effects, for instance, relates a lot to the decline that we capture as the decline in dispersion of rewards to unobserved skills, because of course, in the survey data that we use for the composition of the wage, we cannot see firms, only in the matched employer-employee data. So seeing that the decline in firms' effect was important couples well with the previous results from our decomposition.
As you point out in the paper, this tells us what happened. It doesn't necessarily tell us why it happened. What different type of research do we need for that?
These two decomposition methodologies, they are trying to see what was the big picture behind the decline in inequality and giving the stylized facts that we should try to explain and then point to causality, right? So, mm-hmm. Of course, this is much difficult to do in the context of patterns of inequality over time in a whole country. What we explore then is papers that evaluate either with structural models or that explore some policy shocks using observed data, trying to explore these policy changes and trying to evaluate their impact in the skill premium or even in the variance of wages. And then we try to link these results with what we find in our decomposition methods.
So when we go into these other papers to try and find out these mechanisms, what are we discovering here? Can we say wages rose because there was a change in demand for certain types of worker?
There was changes in the demand, of course. So there was a rise in the demand for low-skilled labor. But there was a lot of important changes in the supply of labor in Brazil, which certainly had some general equilibrium effects. One example is the increase in education, overall education in Brazil. This is something that previous research suggested was super important to reduce inequality in the country, not only in Brazil, but in other Latin American countries. There was a very important increase in overall levels of schooling in the country and college completion. And in fact, this matches with the reduction in the skill premium and the education premium that we find in the composition method. We also see that an increase in education also comes with increasing the dispersion of wages because wages are much more dispersed among college-educated individuals.
So if I'm getting this correctly, because there are more highly educated people coming into the workforce, they can't demand such a high premium on their wages because there are more people able to take those jobs. On the other hand, jobs that highly educated people are getting, the dispersion of wages is higher in those jobs anyway. So we've got these two competing effects going on. Is that correct?
Exactly. And they go in opposite directions. And so the net effect of education, for instance, is not as high. Mm-hmm. But you also have other shocks in the economy during this period that likely changed the demand for skills. The two examples that we explore is the trade openness that took place in the 90s in Brazil. So there is some research showing that this contributed to a decline in the skill premium in the country. A decade later, we had the commodity boom. This also increased demand for low-skilled workers in Brazil. And this contributed to the decline in the skill premium because this rose wages of the low-skilled workers relative to high-skilled workers. These shocks contributed to around 5 to 10% of the decline in the skill premium in Brazil in the period as well.
The Brazilian government also focused a lot on the minimum wage during this period. Increases in the minimum wage, you mentioned it once before. I would imagine this would have quite a large effect. Did it, when we look at these papers, did it have a big effect on inequality?
Yes. So minimum wage increased in real terms more than 100% between the late 90s to the mid-2010s. It was a really impressive increase in the real minimum wage, and we would expect that this would affect the wage distribution. And in fact, papers have done that. They try to estimate spillover effects of the minimum wage and its effects on the overall distribution, wage distribution. And they estimate that around half of the decline in the variance of wages in Brazil can be attributed to the decline in the minimum wage. This is related, as I mentioned before, to the decline in the dispersion of firms' effects, to the decline in the dispersion of the unobserved skills premium. But there is a small caveat here. Most of this research that tried to look at minimum wage, they focus on formal workers.
Right, yes.
And we have a lot of informal workers in Brazil. There is some research trying to investigate how minimum wage affects informality in Brazil. There is some evidence that it increases informality. But here, our review concluded that there is no ready answer for that. We don't really know what's going on in the informal sector with respect to the impacts of the minimum wage. So this is something that we should take a look further in the coming years. There is some working papers trying to investigate that. So let's see how they are received by the profession.
Another area of government policy in Brazil has been to try and reduce the amount of race and gender discrimination. And there have been some quite strong affirmative action policies in Brazil as well. Has this contributed to this reduction in the Gini?
Around 15% of the decrease could be associated with declines in the discrimination. Here, discrimination understood as the penalty that women and Black people in Brazil receiving their wages conditional on all other factors. I don't think this is related to affirmative actions in Brazil for one reason. Affirmative actions in Brazil, contrary to the US, is much more recent. So it started in the 2000s, 2010s. There is a lot of research showing that these affirmative action policies were really important to include people, especially in elite colleges in Brazil. But these people are only starting to enter the workforce. So I don't think this is the thing behind this decline. But there are other things related to that. We know that women have been entering the workforce in developed countries in Brazil as well. The penalty that they receive in the labor market is reducing over time. We also have a reduction in fertility rates. This also contributes to reduce the gender penalty. We also observe a small reduction in the racial penalty in Brazil against Black people. There is some research showing that this is also related to trade openness. It had an impact. You expect that with increased competition among firms, it should decline the discrimination component of wages. And this is something that we have observed in Brazil.
Tie this story together for me, Alison. To sum up, we have observed this reduction in wage inequality in Brazil over two decades and quite a large reduction. What has been important in creating that and what perhaps has been less important?
There is no silver bullet. There was a lot of policies that we put together. None of them acted by themselves. There is a very interesting paper, for instance, that tries to incorporate the minimum wage with the informal sector, for instance. And despite the minimum wage having had an important effect on the drop of inequality, they try to argue, as with counterfactual scenarios, the structural model, that increasing the minimum wage by itself would not have reduced the inequality. It was a result of a similar increase in the productivity of workers that is related, for instance, to their education. So the increase in education, a lot of workers should be more productive. The concomitant increase their wages, especially at the floor, and they don't go to the informal sector because of that, which would increase inequality. So it's a kind of a mix of policies that should be pursued. It's also interesting to see that the decline in inequality in Brazil stopped more or less at the same time that Brazil stopped to grow. To decrease inequality in Brazil, we combined economic growth, we combined stability. It's also a very interesting coincidence that inequality started to decline in Brazil in 1995, which was the year after monetary stabilization. We had hyperinflation until 1994. At the same time, we had trade openness. This is different to some other countries. In Brazil, the most protected sectors were really heavy in skilled workers and in capital. So as soon as we opened the country, investments flow to sectors that demand low-skilled labor, so their premium will increase. So the wages of low-skilled workers will increase. The commodity boom also contributed. The minimum wage had a more important effect precisely in the areas in Brazil that benefited more from the commodity boom. At the same time, there is a lot of things that we don't quite know. For instance, technological change, which has been pointed out as super important to explain the increasing inequality in rich countries. We don't really know how this is playing out in Brazil and in developing countries in general. The decline in the experience premium was really important in Brazil. We don't quite know what was responsible for that. So there is still a lot of unanswered questions. It's a mixture of policies that resulted in this decline in inequality in Brazil.
I guess it's always slightly discouraging to policymakers to hear that there is no silver bullet. But on the other hand, we cannot ignore that this is a long-term good news story and is very instructive about the interaction of those policies. I look forward to seeing some more research on it. You'll probably be doing some of that. But for now, Alisson, I think you've worked hard enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. It was a pleasure being here.
The paper is called Declining Wage Inequality in Developing Countries, The Case of Brazil. And the authors, Alisson Portela and Sergio Firpo. It is in the Journal of Economic Literature. It's forthcoming at the moment, but that won't be for long. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to follow us. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. All our past episodes, as always, at voxdev.org, where there are also articles about the topics we feature. If you like what you hear, please tell someone else about us. Leave us a review as well. Vox Dev Talks is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber and our editor is Andrei Zargarian. Thanks to Oliver Hanni and Iman Siddiq at Vox Dev.